In June, as McCain emerged as the presumptive Republican nominee and Obama's grinding campaign against Senator Hillary Clinton neared a finish, McCain proposed a gas tax holiday to provide temporary relief to commuters burdened by soaring pump prices. The holiday would, in fact, help middle-class households hurting from unexpected gasoline expenses over which they had no control, but it had a chicken-in-every-pot opportunism about it and did nothing to address the glaring gaps in American energy and climate policies. Clinton embraced McCain's idea, but Obama announced, in effect, "This is stupid. The American people are smarter than this." Against the advice of his campaign pollsters, he used the issue to differentiate himself from McCain and Clinton, painting them as pandering politicians, and he came out fine. The easiest case to make was to pound on big oil. To many independent voters and disillusioned Republicans, Obama's strategists knew, the symbolic ExxonMobil-Cheney complex pointed toward all that had gone wrong in the Bush years: the Iraq War, the rise in American economic inequality and economic insecurity at home, an economy that seemed grotesquely based on greed and was beginning to teeter, and a corrupt culture in Washington that reinforced these failings by favoring special interests. Obama therefore salted his campaign speeches with ExxonMobil references, even when they were gratuitous. The very word ExxonMobil resonated in his favor. "It's not going to be easy to have a sensible energy policy in this country. ExxonMobil made $11 billion last quarter. They're not going to give up those profits easily," Obama said at an early primary debate. As the Democratic race narrowed to a campaign of attrition between Obama and Hillary Clinton, the two candidates competed in public about who opposed ExxonMobil more ardently. Then, after Obama's nomination became secure, he turned the same line of rhetorical attack on McCain. When McCain announced a plan to reform corporate taxes, Obama's researchers figured out how much of the benefit would flow to ExxonMobil and immediately made that the focus of their criticism. "Think about that," Obama said at a rally in North Carolina. "At a time when we're fighting two wars, when millions of Americans can't afford their medical bills or their tuition bills, when we're paying more than $4 a gallon for gas, the man who rails against government spending wants to spend $1.2 billion on a tax break for ExxonMobil. That isn't just irresponsible. It's outrageous." The Bush administration and the McCain campaign studied polls that showed many Americans favored new offshore oil drilling as a strategy to reduce high gasoline prices. They announced coordinated plans to promote more domestic exploration in ocean waters. "Drill, baby, drill," became a tongue-in-cheek sounding chant at Republican rallies that summer. Obama promptly linked McCain's offshore plan to ExxonMobil's $11.68 billion in quarterly profits and denounced it as merely an oil company wish list. The Democratic nominee also embraced a plan to impose windfall taxes on oil corporations when global oil prices were about $80 per barrel, as they had been throughout 2008. Obama also declared again and again that if he were elected, he would push with new vigor, working with Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress, to cap greenhouse gas emissions and to invest heavily in solar, wind, and biofuels. Privately, he recognized that the American oil industry is of economic significance and that greater domestic drilling reduces imports and the balance of payments problem, an advisor on energy issues said. But Obama wanted a comprehensive package that combined increased oil and gas production with progress on carbon pricing. The idea was an all-of-above strategy that advanced both energy security and environmental goals. More than his profit bashing, Obama's climate and alternative energy policies, the ones he might actually be able to push through Congress as president, galvanized the attention of ExxonMobil's public affairs executives and K Street lobbyists. "We must end the age of oil in our time," Obama declared. "We felt like a candidate," one of the corporation's executives recalled. "Both parties were mentioning us by name. So we were a candidate, and we clearly knew that we were not electable." A Democratic congressman, Maurice Henschy, even ventured that ExxonMobil's profits had crossed the moral threshold of what is acceptable. That sort of language, and the fervor and excitement that seemed to be coalescing around Obama's candidacy suggested something more threatening to ExxonMobil than the usual cycle of congressional hearings and antitrust inquiries whenever gasoline prices spiked and American drivers howled. Trustbusters had broken up Standard Oil on moral as much as economic grounds. ExxonMobil had no cause to fear anything so drastic, yet the costs and taxes Democrats in Washington might impose on a corporation as unpopular as ExxonMobil, in an emotional populist period of high gasoline prices and huge corporate profits, could not be easily forecasted. In American history, a number of industries had been regulated and taxed during periods of popular revolt against corporate power on the grounds that the targeted businesses were public callings and served a public interest function, banking, telecommunications, transportation, electric energy, and natural gas transport among them. In mid-July, global oil prices crossed above $140 a barrel. If such prices persisted, Democrats were almost certain to seek relief for disadvantaged households trapped by long commutes to work and stagnant incomes. Tillerson and his corporate planning group could not figure out what was causing the 2008 price spike. The detailed internal analysis of global supply and demand produced by ExxonMobil economists during early 2008 suggested that global prices were moving much higher than market fundamentals would predict. Was hot speculative money pouring into commodity funds a factor? Were traders assessing political risk in West Africa or the Middle East as a more profound, forward-looking bottleneck on supply than ExxonMobil did? Tillerson felt genuinely befuddled. On the one hand, the corporation's typical one-right-answer analysis suggested that some sort of bubble had inflated and that oil prices would eventually fall, relieving some of the reputational pressure faced by Big Oil that summer. On the other hand, ExxonMobil had forsworn price forecasts precisely because the corporation had learned over many years that oil prices could not be accurately predicted on the basis of the empirical methods employed by ExxonMobil's economists and planners. The truth about future prices was anybody's guess. In the meantime, the corporation's reputation was being pounded.